we all have some version of a bathroom moment where we're looking in the mirror going, who are you? I don't even know you anymore. That is our moment to go, oh, I need to come inward. We do like our children. We love our children. But oftentimes we don't like the way we feel when we're with our children. I was harming myself on the inside, criticizing myself, and starving myself to have the shape, like you said, that would be appealing to everyone else.
Hey, y'all. I'm Reese, and welcome to Making Meaning, a podcast by the Cohere Collective, here to help guide you along your path to make meaning in a way that makes sense for you. And this week, I am joined by the lovely Diane Sorensen. Diane is a life coach and has her own podcast that just recently got a beautifully refreshing rebrand, and it is now called the Chaos to Connection Podcast. Diane specializes in some really, really beautiful work, specifically helping women with the mother wound and these cycles that women go through. Those of us in the spiritual spheres, the esoteric world, will have heard of the maiden mother crone triad, but I'm sure anyone who experiences being a woman understands the pressures of being a mother, and whether you become a mother or not, that is certainly something so closely intertwined with the societal expectation placed upon women, and so therefore womanhood in general, and the relationship that all of us have with our mothers and that our mothers have with their mothers and so on is such a deep lineage that we feel energetically in our bones, but also genetically. The egg that my mom had that one day became me was literally inside of her when my grandma gave birth to my mom, because as women, we are born, well, I suppose as females, I should say, we are born with all of the eggs that we will ever have for reproduction already in our bodies. So all of you females out there, you were literally inside of your grandmother, and the stress that was put on her during pregnancy, some part of that is genetically a part of you. And what do all of these things, plus all of the additional difficulties and joys and experiences that we go through in life, do to us in our identity as women and in our relationship to those that raise us and those that we raise? That is the heart of Diane's work, and it was really such a joy to discuss this cycle that we all go through and this ancestral lineage that we have all passed down and will continue to pass down. Whether or not we choose to have biological kids, I do believe everyone becomes a mentor, a leader, a nurturer in some way for future generations. So we all participate in this lineage. And I also loved hearing Diane's story to discovering why this was her calling, her purpose, why this spark was finally ignited into a flame at the core of all of her work. On that note, I am going to offer a content warning for this entire episode. Generally, I like to do so for just specific timestamps and put them in the description. That way you can hop around if you would like to skip them. But throughout this whole episode, we do discuss self-harm. And that is a really core theme in a lot of what we are going to discuss, because it is an inciting incident of Diane's story and how she discovered her purpose, or remembered her purpose, perhaps. So if those themes are going to be upsetting to you, I do recommend checking out a different episode of Making Meaning. I will link one down below that I think you will enjoy that will hopefully discuss some similar themes. And if you're watching on YouTube, I will put it in the corner up above, whichever one it pops up on. Also, if you would like to check out Diane's work, of course, all of the links to do so will be in the description box down below, along with her podcast. So please go support Diane. Go check out all of the beautiful stuff that she has on offer. Okay, I believe that is all I have for you. So let's take a deep breath. and get started. Diane, thank you so very much for joining me today. I'm so excited to be sitting down, chatting with you, and to connect, hear more about your story and how you make meaning. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you, Reese, for having me here. I'm very honored to be here with you and your listeners, and I think we're going to have a great conversation.
Absolutely, me too. Well, my first question, to hopefully just set a nice intention and tone for our whole conversation, is what is one thing you're grateful for?
Something I am grateful for. I am grateful that I am sitting here in this conversation with you right now, Reese. This is the only place I need to be at this time. There's nowhere else I need to be, nothing else I need to do.
I love that. And isn't that such a beautiful thing to be grateful for, too, when you realize, like, all of my sleep meditations that I listen to at night always tell me, like, there's nothing else you need to do. Everything that needs to be done can be done tomorrow. And it's just like, yeah, that's actually true. And to settle into that feeling is just so like, oh, so this is peace. This is what that peace feels like. And to tap into that is truly such a beautiful feeling. So thank you for being in this space with me. My second question to open up our conversation is, what is your story? I know that's a really big and broad question, but whatever you feel called to speak to in this moment is absolutely perfect.
Yeah. Thank you for asking. So my story is that I was a good girl who became a good mom, doing all the right things according to, you know, societal expectations. I was being, you know, the perfect wife and mother and teacher and everything. And then my then 17-year-old daughter went through a mental health crisis. And it was that experience that showed me the pressure I was putting on myself, but also unknowingly putting on my children. And even though that was a really dark time in my life, it was also the catalyst for my own growth and transformation. And it was through that journey that took me on a whole different path and brought me to life coaching and working with other women, and in particularly mothers.
That's so beautiful. And I think something that a lot of my audience can probably relate to is the good girl archetype, right? And what that means. Talk to me a little bit about what that means to you. I know you mentioned doing all the right things through societal expectations. And I'm sure everyone starts to write our own stories of what that looks like. But what did that look like for you? And where do you think the messaging of you needing or wanting to be a good girl originally came from?
Yeah. So what it means to me is to appear to others in an approving way. And where it came from is my own mother was very, I can look back now and say, wow, she was very anxious about how people saw her. And then, so of course, how people saw her children. And so there was never anything, you know, nobody says, here's what you, who, this is who you have to be. But there's so many, right, you know, attitudes, and just through actions and experiences, got the message that, you know, I needed to act in a certain way, behave in a certain way. Don't, I mean, beyond everything else, whatever you do, don't upset anybody. So it really made me very anxious about, you know, what I could or couldn't say or should or shouldn't say. How do I say it? What it brought me to was I was ended up living in this prison in my mind of what's everybody else thinking? What are people going to think? And so I mean, all my choices and all my actions were about what are other people going to think? And really, I kind of remember as I went into high school thinking, okay, I used to be extremely shy. And I think that was the anxiousness of, well, I don't know what to say and who to say to. You know, is this going to be the right thing? Is it going to be the wrong thing? Am I going to get in trouble? And I seemed to get in trouble whether I spoke or not. As I was going to high school, I thought, okay, this shy thing and not talking to people is not working for me anymore. And I had to figure out a way to be in the world and be safe. And so I presented myself in a way that I thought people would approve of me and like me and not cast me out or be mad at me or get in trouble. So I did all the things that I thought were the right things. And then I became a mother and all of it came along, you know, because these become patterns. We don't know that we're doing it. We're not, you know, getting dressed every day going, okay, I'm going to put on this performance for the world today. No, we just do it. It becomes an ingrained pattern. And then when you have children, I mean, that like 10x's itself, because now what are people going to think of these little humans that you're in charge of? And now I got to control them. And it puts a lot of pressure on mothers and a lot of pressure on children.
Absolutely. One thing that was a really big unlock for me and my own work, specifically with body image, but I think it relates back to what you're speaking to, is how the notion that the way that our moms speak to themselves and about their own bodies is how we learn to speak to ourselves and our bodies. Mm-hmm. And even though your mom may not be the one saying like, oh, well, that doesn't look good on you, or, you know, you need to count your calories or you need to do these certain things, if you do have a figure that is saying, well, this doesn't look good on me, I need to count my calories, I need to go on this diet, and all of those things, subconsciously, that is what your children internalize. And I know that a lot of your work speaks to the mother wound. And I think that it's a powerful one, especially as women. And it ties real nicely back into the good girl expectations, because motherhood is such an expectation in and of itself, right? That society tells us that that is a way to fully express what being a woman is and what being a woman means.
And it comes naturally. And, you know,
right.
Supposed to be so happy that we have these beautiful children. And, oh, yeah.
All of that, yes. But also, there's no one right way to be a mother, but absolutely there is this like PTO soccer mom archetype that we see that is like, okay, well, I need to be this mom that's doing this type of thing and this type of thing, and also the million different things that comes with. So it's this layered expectation of womanhood that is so intimately tied to this relationship that you have to these people that are the most important little humans in your life. So talk to me a little bit about your relationship with choosing to be a mother and the good girl expectation there, but also I suppose let's just start there. I have another layer that I want to get to. But yeah, the expectation of choosing to be a mother and what the societal heft that motherhood brought to you.
Yeah. So I didn't ever feel pressured to be a mother. And I know that society does that. It's like, well, what's wrong with you if you're not a mother?
Right.
But I remember from a very, I don't ever remember not wanting to be a mother or to mother. I loved children. I loved children younger than me. I was the youngest of five. So I loved children younger than me. And I just, yeah, I always wanted to be a mother. And I just thought that was going to be the greatest thing on earth. And I thought I would be really good at it, too. I have a background in education. I was a teacher. And so I thought I was going to be the great, this great mother. And I became a mother, and it was nothing like the image that I had in my head, or even the image that culture feeds us about, again, about how this is a natural thing and everybody, you know, every woman just knows how to be a mother. And there's an expectation of it. It's a happy, you know, happiness. There's something wrong with you if you don't like being a mother. I mean, geez, that would be like, I don't like my children. But right. Here's the thing is that, I mean, I think for a lot of us mothers, that is a very unspoken sense in the back of our minds. Like, do I not like my children? Because there are a lot of times where it's like, it's not fun to be around my children.
Yeah.
But here's what it is. We do like our children. We love our children. But oftentimes we don't like the way we feel when we're with our children. And it's not anything to do with our children. It's really to do with what is going on inside of us, and that our nervous system is responding to what it is. It's kind of remembering and responding to what it felt like to be called disrespectful or out of control or any of these things when we see it in our children. And so sometimes just being with our children feels so out of control, and
yeah,
that it doesn't feel good. And then we think there's something wrong with us because we're not feeling this bliss of being a mother.
Right. That is so powerful because, you know, like you said, there are these cycles that get solidified and just subconsciously repeated throughout different family stories and different lineages. That is just something that occurs psychologically, but also energetically. We know this about family lines. But I've never thought about this piece of it that you just spoke to, that is, not only are we repeating cycles as the same role, but you're switching roles in this cycle that is being repeated in a certain sense. And so being the good girl and feeling all of this pressure as a mom, I imagine this internal tug of war that is, well, I want you to be successful and happy and all of these things. And so I need to help educate and coach you and teach you to do these things. But then you find yourself, like, you find your mother's voice coming out of your own mouth, right? Or things that you were told growing up just being said. And it's like, when did I become the same person who was saying things that were so hurtful to me? And in that moment, I can just imagine, like, what is happening, right? Like, what is going on? And it feels so out of control. And I really love the distinction that you made between the feeling of not liking your children versus not liking how you feel in certain circumstances. Because one, I absolutely believe you can love someone and not like them. Right. I think we all go through cycles like that with different people in our lives. But also, there is this certain sense of, like, I'm trying to think of the right way to phrase this, in relationships, we live out our past trauma in current present moments. And that has been something that has been such a powerful paradigm shift for me through my personal work, even just like with friendships and relationships, that it's like, oh, it's not that I have trust issues in the sense that like I can never date again and I always think someone's cheating on me. It's that when we get into an argument about, well, I feel like you don't trust me, I'm repeating what I've been told, and you don't even realize that those subconscious patterns and beliefs are just like seeping out of you because it is such a nervous system thing, right? I think that is absolutely so powerful. And I know you mentioned that a lot of this you carried with you into motherhood. And the big shift for you was your daughter's mental health crisis. Do you think that there were moments when this was happening that along the way you were like, these things are happening and I need to make a shift, but I don't know how to do that. Or I'm sensing this internal tension, this internal tug of war. And your daughter's crisis was just the moment of reckoning, so to speak, kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. Yeah. Or was it really like a, yes, sorry, I'll toss it over to you.
That's okay. Yeah, there probably were small things, maybe showing up that, you know, I just keep ignoring, I couldn't bring it to the forefront of my mind just because wasn't ready to do that. And I think also I just really wasn't self-aware. And so there were, I mean, I always said, I am not going to be like my mother. And then, yes, I got to a point where I'm like, how did I become my mother? When did this happen? But my daughter's mental health crisis. So what happened was she was self-harming. And to be really honest, at first and this was 20 years ago. So self-harm wasn't really well known. I'm like, what in the world is this? And how in the world did we get here? Kind of the reckoning. It was, what is happening and how did we get here? I don't know, but I'm going to have to figure this out. And so I just got curious and things just sort of started to unravel where I started understanding, oh, this isn't even so much about, you know, because then I started, you know, books started coming my way and I started, you know, delving into research and I was a teacher. So I was going, trainees were coming along that I'm like, I want to go to this one. And what I realized as I'm kind of taking in all this information, it's like, oh, this isn't really about my daughter, because I'm like, how do I help her? How do I? And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. All of this is talking about me. Like, I can see all of this in me. And so, yeah, that kind of helped me to go on this path of understanding myself. And now I understand it like this. Her cutting on the outside was a representation of what I was doing to myself on the inside. Because for years I had cut myself down, calling myself names in my head, being very critical, trying to perfect and perform and please and bend myself in all these kind of ways just to gain the approval of everyone else. Mm-hmm. And this coming out on the outside really showed me the generational patterns in our mother, it really showed my own pain. It showed my mother's pain and, you know, all the mothers before that. And so it really was, it was a dark time, but really now I know it was a gift because it couldn't be hidden anymore. And it had to be dealt with somehow. And until we could see it on the outside, we weren't aware enough to begin any healing.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I know we talked about before a little bit that your daughter is comfortable with you sharing certain pieces of your story, but I just want to speak into the space gratitude for your daughter as well in her vulnerability, even though she's not physically with us here. But I think that that is such a powerful framing, because one thing that in the way that our current understanding of the world is post-enlightenment, post-age of reason and all of that good stuff, we live in a materialist world where what you see is what it is, and there's nothing beyond the physical. And of course, that's just within the most recent couple hundred years that that's become the popular way of understanding things. And I think that it's really stunted a lot of us in this specific type of work that is, well, I don't, like, I'm feeling these things and I have these mental states, but like, nothing's wrong. Like, I'm fine. And seeing the physical manifestation of this generational pattern, of course, is this powerful wake up of that's what this is. And having this, like, the energetic piece of it finally being like, oh, I can see it. I can feel it. I can touch it. Hey, y'all. It's Reese, just briefly interrupting my conversation with Diane to ask you what you think. Have you had any insights sparked during this episode? And let me know, has someone else's journey with their mental health or self-discovery or self-improvement been an inciting incident for you to go on your own journey? I think so many of us are deeply interconnected and related to those that we care about in our lives, of course. And therefore, when those around us start going through something or setting off on a new journey, that often has a ripple effect for us. But I don't think many of us choose to walk that journey that maybe we feel called to in those moments. But man, did Diane pick up the mantle and just run with it. So let me know, has that ever happened for you? And have you had any other insights during this episode? I would love to hear about them. Let's have a conversation in the comments wherever you may be listening or watching. Also, if you are enjoying this episode, please leave it a like, give us a 5-star rating and a review, and just drop a comment letting me know what you're liking about it too. It really, really helps me understand what kind of content you're enjoying, the topics that you really love, and it is the best way to support the Making Meaning podcast and the Cohere Collective. And on top of that, come follow the Cohere Collective wherever you have social media. We do too. And you'll be able to check out a bunch of different stuff that we have going on and head on over to our website to learn more about the Cohere Collective. And over there, you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter, which is called the Muse Letter, so that weekly insights for cultivating coherence will hit your inbox absolutely for free every single week. Okay, back to this conversation. In this really real way. I think that's really powerful and perhaps a lot of, I think, helpful for a lot of people that may be listening to this and thinking that they feel these cycles and patterns, but it's like, but there's nothing that I can put my finger on as to like what it is. You don't necessarily need the physical manifestation of that to be in your face or existing at all. You can absolutely own and honor and heal these patterns too. But the other thing that I want to speak to is like, how your daughter's pain was also such a catalyst for healing. Thinking about these cycles, we often talk about, you know, I think I've said this in the past in different conversations that we've had, but there's the saying, you heal yourself and you heal your family and you heal the world. That it does seem perhaps odd to say that your daughter was healing her family through her pain, but I think in some really beautiful, profound sense, she was. I would just love to hear your thoughts about that and maybe a little bit more about this cycle and pieces that your daughter was carrying that came from her grandmother and your grandmother. And what is your thought on why there is this energetic passing down? Is it just the psychological piece? Is it just a, you know, internalized inner voice way of talking to the self? Or is there something genetic to it? What are the different components here that we carry and pass on through our lineage?
Yeah, I think it's all of that, Reese. You know, we do have what is that word?
Is it epigenetics?
Yes,
epigenetics.
That say, yes, we carry the stress, the stress hormones are passed from mother to mother to mother. Because when you are conceived, when you're inside your mother, you already... So when my mother was inside her mother's womb, she already carried the egg that would someday become me. And, you know, so that is already being bathed in stress hormones and, you know, all of this stuff, depending on what was happening at the time with her mother. And then what was happening in, you know, what her experiences were, what was happening with her, what I, you know, when she conceived me. So a lot of this is not in our control, right? It just is. So some of it is biology. And then I think, you know, too, where, you know, and this kind of goes back to nature and nurture, but it's both, right? Where I think it can be triggered by, you know, different things going on in the family. So if there's a lot of stressors going on for whatever reason, whether it's actual things like divorce or a death or whatever, or it's just this mental load that we're carrying that, you know, creates all kinds of chaos inside, because that chaos inside is going to create chaos outside, right? So I always say inward is the new way forward, because if we're not paying attention and choosing to turn inward and check in with what is going on inside of me, in my thoughts, in my body, deep within, in my emotions, am I feeling my emotions? Am I disassociating from them? Am I distracted from them? Because that's a huge one, right? That's a whole another. Yeah. We distract ourselves from our emotions because they're painful. We don't want to feel uncomfortable. And so that goes into this whole pattern of people pleasing and perfectionism, that if I just do everything right and I don't upset anybody, then I will feel okay. I will be okay. I'll be safe. I'll be loved and everything will be fine. Yeah. And so I think it's all of that that you had mentioned. It's all of the pieces. And healing is really just awareness of, this isn't working for me. right? This is, you know, we get to a certain point in our life and, you know, we all have some version of a bathroom moment where we're looking in the mirror going, who are you? I don't even know you anymore. And that is our moment to go, oh, I need to come inward. Because otherwise we were like, geez, what's wrong with me? Why am I not happy? I have all the things. I've checked all the boxes. I've got the family, the profession, the house, the money, the whatever. Why can't I just be happy? Am I not grateful? You know, what's wrong with me?
Right. Yeah. It's so multiplicitous, right? Like it really holds so much. And thank you for holding the complexity of that. And I love what you said about the bathroom moment, because as soon as you said that, I was like, yep, I know exactly what you're talking about. We have all had that bathroom moment and probably had a few along the way, right? Where it is just kind of like the self, for lack of a better term, like come to Jesus, that is like, okay, we gotta lock in. We have to go inward to go forward. And another thing that I wanted to touch on, I do want to move forward into what this healing process really looked like. But before we turn there, I also want to ask you about how you described this sense of your own relationship to self-harm, and that even though it looked very different than your daughter's relationship to self-harm, it was a practice that was internally going on within you. And I remember the first time my therapist told me something about how she's like, that's a self-harming behavior, Reese. And I was like, well, I'm not cutting myself. I'm not self-harming the way that it's typically discussed in media. And one, while it's gotten a lot better over the last 20 years to be able to have open conversations about these things and ending the mental health stigma, there is still so much to unpack and to hold and to bring awareness to. But I know that was really hard for me to reckon with that. But I love myself. I like myself. Why would I do that? Why am I harming myself? And really to sit back and think about, oh, exactly like you said, all the times that I'm cutting myself down or bending myself backwards or squeezing and morphing and merging to try and create a shape that I think will be pleasing to someone else. All of that is like dulling your shine, right? It is watering yourself down. And one of my things for this year, I make a vision manifestation board for my year each year. And one of the quotes that I put on this one that I'm feeling called to share with you is, I'm done watering myself down. You can choke, which sounds really aggressive. But also, I'm like, you're not going to be everyone's cup of tea, you know? And if my tea is too strong for you, like, that's okay. But I'm not watering it down anymore. So all that to say, talk to me about what that realization was like for you and this expansive definition of what self-harm can be and that your bathroom moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I think self-harm, you know, I was harming myself on the inside, criticizing myself and starving myself to have the shape, like you said, that would be appealing to everyone else. And I mean, that is self-harming right there. I was going to say something and lost my train of thought.
It's okay.
But yeah, I mean, oh, I was going to say that society rewards that. Society rewards us harming ourselves to look good. Whether that's starving ourselves to look thin or, you know, having, you know, surgeries to make our face look younger or, I mean, whatever it is. I mean, we are rewarded for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it led to, you know, disordered eating and eating disorders in our family.
Mm. Yeah, that's such a powerful point because it's true. We are rewarded for it. And also in going back a little bit to these expectations of motherhood, but also what womanhood means, it is to be small in a lot of different ways, like physically small, noise small, quiet, petite, and don't take up space energetically and look pretty, right?
Yeah. And I did all those things. That was the good
right. Yep. And that's the good girl. Yes. And it's like, not only is it rewarded to do all those things, it's also punished to be big and loud and quote unquote abrasive, right?
Right. Because we divide the world into two halves, the good and the bad, the right and the wrong. And whatever you put in that wrong and bad column, don't be any of that.
Yeah.
It will only be what goes in this column. So that means like only all the time.
Right. And to go back to this good girl thing, it's like, if I feel any inclination towards something that may be in the bad column, oh, we got to shut that down. We got to fix that. We need to change that. We need to whatever it is, because that's only going to bring rejection, shame, fear, being abandonment, right? Like the list goes on and on of all of those different feelings and what that can tap into. And so as you began this self-healing work and realizing as you're going to these different workshops and reading these different books, oh, this actually resonates with me, not just what my daughter is going through. When you had that awareness, I know you spoke to earlier that awareness is so much of healing, but I think sometimes when we say, you know, awareness is 90% of the battle, people think that that means, oh, I'm aware, and now 90% of it is done. And I'm always like, well, I think it's actually bringing your mind to awareness consistently over and over and over again during all of these moments, like maintaining this awareness and presence of mind of the reality of the situation consistently is actually what awareness looks like, to be able to contribute to healing, because that's how you can hopefully change behavior, but also internal dialogues and the awareness of bringing what is subconscious to the conscious. But I would love to hear more about your journey through reaching awareness, but also maintaining this awareness and how that sparked this healing journey for you and your daughter and the mother wound generational piece too.
Yeah. So, you know, for a while, it was just bringing all this awareness and I just soaked it up. I mean, I never knew, but I was starving for this information. Mm. And it, for the first time, I felt seen because I was, you know, reading these books and going to these conferences and it's like, geez, I'm not the only one. What? And reflecting back, a lot of the things I was thinking or feeling that I thought it was just me. And so that was, you know, a door open. And I think we just keep opening doors. We just keep going. We keep going. We keep going. And then eventually I was like, okay, now I need more help. I need, you know, I kind of got to a point where I'm like, okay, I've got all this information. I'm, you know, trying to implement the pieces as I can into my own personal life as well as in my classroom. So I actually completely changed the environment in my classroom. But that's another story. And I got to a point where I'm like, okay, I need more help. So that's when I hired my first coach. And just more layers started coming off. So I don't think this is work we can do by ourselves. We can start out, you know, we can read the books, we can, you know, go to the speaking engagements or whatever it is. But we really do need to do the work, which means taking action and practicing these skills in a meaningful way. And I just don't think we can do that just on our own. We need the accountability, and we need somebody to hold the space for us to be able to even reflect and ask questions. Because when you can work with somebody who is curious and is asking questions and helping you explore and discover, and you become curious, and that opens up a whole nother layer of self-awareness. And then figuring out, okay, here's where I'm at and here's where I want to go. So now what are some small actions that I can take to start moving me in this other direction, in the direction I want to go? And so that's kind of how healing happened for me, and it continues. It's not a linear thing. It's circular, right? We just keep going around the sun, and these, you know, core limiting beliefs, you know, if I'm not good enough or whatever, we bump into those every time we hit a growth edge, right? And then boom, there it is. Oh, I can't do that. So resistance comes up, and then, you know, you reach out for, you know, some support or whatever, however you do it. And so you can actually take the action that will get you to the next point. And you keep doing that. You keep rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. And it also helps to surround yourself with other people, like-minded people who maybe are on this type of journey too, so that you do feel supported and you don't feel alone.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so powerful. And one thing that's been coming up a lot for me in my own kind of cycles of growth is that the life of your dreams will cost you your current life. Because in order to be somewhere new, you have to be somewhere new. You have to move forward. And I think everything you're speaking to about surrounding yourself with people that are going to support this work, but also changing your classroom, right? And changing your day-to-day and your career and the way that you engage with the world, it really does call you to a different level of presence in, I'm now bringing this energy to everything I do because this life that I'm working on is worth everything. I am worth everything.
Yeah. And that's truly integrating it across your, into every bucket of your life. That's an integrated.
Right. Yes. Yes, exactly. Well, into, I'm like a coherent life, if you will. Ooh, which is my favorite term, right? And it's like this internal coherence that exactly like you were talking about, that is tapping into what that is internally to then represent it externally across all of these different buckets of our life. And sometimes I think we all, especially with the good girl baggage, I'll say, tend to really struggle with the selfish, quote unquote, feeling that healing can bring up. And I know for me, I love me some of the self-care. I love me the self-love work. I love the I am worthy stuff, because that is one of those wounds that comes up time and time again for me on those growth edges, exactly like you're talking about. And I think especially as women and as mothers, doing this work for ourselves and that being good enough can be so hard to hold. And of course, you had this beautiful positive benefit of helping your daughter through this work too, in a deeply unselfish and giving way. But I think sometimes that negative voice of, well, why do you deserve to take all this time just for you? You have kids, you have a partner, you have students, you have all of these people that you have promises to, and you're taking time to rest, to figure out like purpose and passion. Like, who's okay, big for your britches, you know, are these little demons that I know will pop up for me. Did you experience any of that? And talk to me about that too, because I think so often, of course, there are giving things that come out of it, but we tell ourselves that doing this work in and for ourselves isn't enough, and it really is. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I would really like to put a different spin on that selfish thing, because please. I really think it's selfish to be serving everyone else at the cost of yourself. Because that is not sustainable. And you are not genuinely serving. You are really doing it to be enough. It's a survival skill. It's a coping skill. And so to stay in that, even when you know there could be something else, that to me is selfish, because you cannot give from an empty cup, and you're choosing to keep it empty. And that's what I did for a long, long time, until my daughter, in that very specific way, was really saying, my cup is empty, your cup is empty, this is not working. All of our cups are empty.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
I really had to let go of trying to fix her or try, you know, yes, there was some support pieces, but I really had to let go of her and turn towards what I needed to heal in myself. That was very giving to her, because in that process, she started over time to heal inside as well. And it wasn't until I'm able to truly let go, you know, and we don't just let go all of a sudden. There's, you know, pieces of it. And even now,
of course,
I catch myself going, ooh, I need to let go a little bit more, so that they can have their, she can have her own experience and her own journey and heal in her way.
Yeah. That is so powerful, because just the selflessness of letting go, right? Like, whoa. And how hard surrender is. And I think any mother, of course, seeing your child in pain is immediately, what can I do to alleviate this? I would do anything to take this away. But what you had to do to take it away was to let it be and turn inward. Wow. That is just such a powerful paradigm shift. And of course, now it's been, like you said, about 20 years since that kind of moment of reckoning in this experience that you've had. Talk to me about what growth looks like now, and what personal work and motherhood has shifted to become. And of course, exactly like you said, I still have to remind myself certain things, and I still need to work on things, and it's a cycle, and it is never an end point. But my great mentor, Catherine Hart, always tells me rock bottom is the solid foundation on which we can build our life. And I just find that so inspiring. And I don't know if you would categorize this as a rock bottom moment or not, but it does seem to me like you have built a really solid foundation for continuing to grow something. So what does this growth and healing look like now?
Yeah. So I think now, I mean, life is still messy, right? And we allow it to be messy is the thing now. And so when challenge arises, as it will, because it's inevitable, it's more about seeking solutions, or it's more about the journey of healing than it is about fixing something or hiding it or just ignoring it. And we can really talk about it. If one of my daughters is struggling, there was a time where I'd be like, well, I don't, you know, if they're struggling, they probably won't even tell me. So I don't know if they're struggling for sure. Now they do. We've built trusting relationships enough where if one of them is struggling, they can tell me that, knowing that I am not going to fix it, but I am there to listen. If they, you know, want my input, then, you know, I can give them my thoughts. But ultimately, I think we've gotten to where we each have our own journey and experience, and we really honor that. And I can see now that I have grandchildren, and I have grandchildren ranging from 20 to 2, and everything in between. I have 10 grandchildren. So I can see a shift in how they engage with each other and the relationships they have with, you know, each other, but with themselves. You know, I can see a shift. Not that it's perfect. Yay, because we don't want perfect.
Right, right.
But I feel like I am seeing generational patterns heal in real time.
How beautiful. And what a blessing, not just that you've given your family, but that your family gives you, right? It's such a reciprocal blessing to be able to be in it together and witness that and hold space for all of these things. A thing that's occurring to me right now is a notion that I've come across recently in generational and ancestral work, that is the same way that we honor our forebears and ancestors and people that came before us and imagine their lives to be. There was also a reciprocal imagining for how our lives will be now too. And you to your grandchildren is like a beautiful microcosm of that as well, that it's like you had an imagination of what was possible for them, and now you get to see that in real time, but also them through living this work get to share that with you too. And it's just, that's really beautiful to me. It's really, really cool.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And that's my passion here and why I share my own pain and turn it into power, because I think the power of it is we can set the path for future generations on a different path, on a more meaningful, connected, healthy, functional path for them. And one that they still get to struggle, and they still get to mess up and fall down and get up and all of it. But they get to experience the fullness of life.
Right.
Rather than perform a life that looks good to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Well, and decide what that looks like for themselves too, right? Like be the own arbiter of what happiness, joy, success, expansiveness, wholeness, what is the fullness of life, that they get to choose that is, to me, that's like the greatest privilege of being able to choose.
Yes.
And I think this takes us right into where I wanted to go next, that is why you're passionate about this work. So, of course, you were a teacher, and this really informed a lot of, like you said, you transformed your classroom and it changed how you lived your life and your family and your relationships. But now you're a coach and you help other people with this work and you have your own podcast and you talk about this. Plenty of people heal and are on this journey, but aren't called to take this path that you have taken of sharing it openly and really hoping to support other people in that work. What was that moment of calling like, and why have you chosen to walk this new path of, I'm going to share this story. I am going to own my narrative and use it to empower others to do the same.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if it was something I necessarily planned. It kind of just unfolded, right? I just followed the breadcrumbs, as they say. And yeah, this kind of all unfolded. And I saw other people, other mothers suffering, feeling like bad moms. And I wanted to let them know that there's hope and to be inspired to, it doesn't have to be this way. You don't have to prove to anybody at all your worth because you're here.
Mm-hmm.
And I know cognitively we hear that. Oh, you don't have to prove your worth because you're here. That means you're worthy. But it's true. And to do the work to truly know, I don't have to prove myself. And this is coming from somebody who I was addicted to approval.
Mm-hmm.
I would do anything to be approved of. And really, it's because I would do anything to not be rejected. That was so fearful for me. And what I have learned, it kept me in so restricted, so small. And I just want people to know that there is another way and change is possible. And yeah, so this beautiful life just unfolded. And I will tell you this too, that it is my soul pulling me into this direction, because there have been times where I've been like, okay, this is too hard. I'm just going to go back to what I was doing before, because this growth edge is like, whoa, right? Mm-hmm. If I become, you know, it's like, oh my God. But there is something inside me that keeps saying, don't you quit. Don't you keep going, keep going, keep going. So
I love that. And that is the thing to me that is like, I deeply believe, because exactly like you said, you are here. And so you are worthy. And going back to the awareness and not just cognitively being aware of that once, but calling our awareness to that truth time and time and time again, every single moment that the perfectionism or the shame or the self-doubt clocks back in, those old thought patterns and neural pathways, and making the choice to say, no, I'm here, which means I'm worthy. And that's what I choose to believe and live my life in alignment with. It's hard. Exactly like you said, it is hard, but it is so worth it. And I truly believe that everyone has that pull, like you're saying, but it is hard to hear it when the noise of all of these other things are happening. And I think so often so many people do go through their healing journeys and then start to hear this pull or feel this pull or see the breadcrumbs because the noise is cleared up. And it's like you reach this clearing in the woods and it's like, ooh, what path do I get to take now to use what I've learned from this journey and inform whatever I go do and create and become next. Where do you think this, you use the word soul. Where do you think this soul pull, the breadcrumbs, this feeling comes from? Is that something deep within us as a human being? I know we've talked a little bit about the energetic transfer between generational trauma, and so there is something non-material that perhaps you believe in, but talk to me about what that root is, this deep facet of being a human being that pulls you to your meaning.
Yeah, for me, yeah, I think it is deep, deep within. Call it soul, call it intuition, call it my inner knowing. It's just this note for me, it's just this knowing. Like I don't hear a voice. You know, people will talk about I hear something, but it's more of a feeling for me. And I do think, you know, there's a higher power. I connect to universe. And I think deep within each of us, there is a part of that energetic universe within all of us that is the oneness of being human. Right? I am energetic. I'm universal energy expressed in individualized form. That's true for every one of us. And that's the oneness of humanity. We're not actually separate.
I love that. I love the I am universal energy expressed in individualized form. One of my favorite writers he writes in Spanish, so I don't actually, this is a translation of something, but I really like this translation, but it's Jorge Luis Borges, and he says, we are all fingertips of God's consciousness. Mm. And I really love this image of fingertips, right? That it's like something extended and outward, but still individual and yet connected to this oneness, this wholeness. And in the same way that there is this oneness, I am also one. And it does create this bigger cycle of expansion and contraction that goes back to this non-linear experience of healing that we've been speaking about too, right? Like so much of this energy is cyclical and non-linear and goes through these cycles of expansion and contraction. For you, when you first started to feel this pull, this knowing, was that something that you feel has always been there and now was kind of awoken? Or was it something like you were allowed to have listened to it now at this point in time? Or was it discovered? Won't ask any more leading questions. Talk to me about your experience with that moment of knowing.
Yeah, I think it has always been there, but I think I have been disconnected from it. You know, living in my head instead of living, you know, being connected deep within. But I can look back and there's, you know, a few experiences where I'm like, this is deep. Like this is, you know, I had a lot of self-doubt. I did not trust myself. I did not trust making decisions. But I can see a few times, you know, before I did any self-development work where I was sure about something. Like this, for example, the school system that I ended up working for 25 years. I remember I really, really wanted to be in that system. And I remember thinking I ended up, you know, of course getting hired on there, but I remember thinking this just seems like this is where I this is my next step in life. This is where I'm supposed to be. And so I look back and I think, you know, there it was. But I don't think I could hear it because there was a whole lot of noise going on inside of me. I just, you know, there was a lot of inner chaos. So I don't think I could really connect to it or, you know. And I do remember after I started, you know, doing a lot of this work, at one point, there was also a moment where I was, you know, kind of doing this guided meditation. And all of a sudden, my eyes flew open and I just had this feeling. Again, it wasn't words or it wasn't a voice, but it was this feeling. And it's like, I'm supposed to quit my job? Like, then it was like, okay, now you're supposed to leave this system. It's time to go to the next place. And I thought, what does that even mean? Like, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go with this. I'll give it a year. I'll revisit this idea next year. But what I did was I started sharing that. I just started telling people, yeah, I'm not going to be there that much longer. I'm going to be quitting. I don't know what that means, but, you know, I just knew that I wasn't going to be there for another, you know, 10 years or anything. Well, 6 months later, I ended up leaving that job and that teaching. And then my path began with coaching and becoming certified and, you know, this whole another season of my life. So, yeah, I think to answer your question, I think it's been there, but I haven't really, I didn't trust it. That's it. And I, as I continue to understand more about my own self, I trust it more and more.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to trust it, right? Especially with what you're talking about with all this noise and self-doubt and self-criticism. So much of trusting this inner knowing is trusting yourself because, yes, it is the piece of the universal wholeness that is within us that feels somewhat external in that sense that it is bigger than who I am. But also, it's the piece of it that is also me. And therefore, it asks a lot of trusting in myself to believe it, right? And I find that a lot of the time when people go through this and they start to get the glimmers or the whispers or the breadcrumbs, exactly like you said, however we want to describe it, intuitions or downloads, you know, there's all the different words to talk about it. People are like, oh, well, that's just a thought. Like, that's not anything. But
yes,
there's a different quality to those hits. That is like, that's different than something else.
Oh, that's, you know, I don't know what that is, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, and just hearing you tell that story gave me goosebumps because it's like, I've had a few moments like that in my life too, where it's just all of a sudden, boom, it's there in your eye. You're like, oh, now I need, like, there it is. And we have to follow it because how could I not follow that? But it does ask all of that trust.
Yeah. And I think when we don't follow it, we just really start, you know, those are those bathroom moments where it's like, who am I? How did I get here? And we really start to feel like we're dying inside. Like there's, you know,
Yeah, because you're rejecting, at least to me, that inner piece that we're kind of talking about, that piece of self that is connected to wholeness, feels so much like truth. And if you're living out of alignment with your truth, it's like that's who am I if I'm not this certain sense of truth? But truly going all the way back to what you were talking about in the beginning with the good girl expectations. There are so many little truths.
We can't live with that truth if we're being the good girl.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
And going back to, you know, what I'm seeing now, like in my relationships with my daughters, it's actually that we're speaking truth now. We're not just trying to make each other comfortable. We're speaking our truth, and that builds trust.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Brené Brown's clear is kind, unclear is unkind, too, which is a little different than I think what you're saying, but connected in the sense of like, if I'm clear on my truth and I can own that when I come to the table, that does offer a certain sense of I know where you stand. And that builds emotional safety and energetic safety in relationships. And I'm even thinking about what you said about your daughters for a really long time wouldn't even come to you if they felt like they were struggling or uncertain. And now you know that they would. And it's like clearly this journey of owning your truth has cultivated in a very real lived sense emotional safety. And I just think it's so powerful how I'm just constantly struck by how these more energetic, numinous, ephemeral topics that we talk about to me have the realest world implications, that it is like it has completely changed the trajectory of your life and your relationships.
Yeah.
Thoughts. I don't know if there's a question in there, but yeah.
I was going to say something. You know how you do that? You get these thoughts.
Yeah.
It goes somewhere. It was Brown's speaking the truth. And, you know, we have to actually know what our truth is, though. Oh, I know what I was going to say. One of the things we want most as a mother is that when our children are struggling, they can come to us. We really want that. But here's the thing. We don't realize that when they struggle, we're trying to always fix it. We're not listening to them. So we're always saying they need to listen. They need to listen. They're not listening. We need to turn that around and say, how am I listening? When we can't be with our own struggle, we can't be with the struggles of our kids. So we will just, you know, they'll say something like, so-and-so was mean to me at school today. And then we'll go, oh, well, you know, you don't need to have them as a friend anymore and go with these people because you're so wonderful. And, you know, we want them to feel good, but we're not, in the meantime, we're kind of dismissing how they actually feel. And that is exactly what my daughter told me, you know, later years when we were able to really talk about these things. And I said, why didn't you ever tell me? And she's like, Mom, I tried. Wow. You know, it was always, oh, you're fine, or you're overreacting, or, you know, and we just do this off that we don't, it just automatically comes because we're so afraid of their struggle.
Well, and I have to imagine part of it too, because this is something I've really been experiencing in friendships and just all relationships, is that we really, as a society, I think, have a difficult time withholding discomfort, but we really need to work on getting comfortable with the discomfort. And so often when someone brings something to us, especially if it's about us, like, hey, you said this thing and it hurt my feelings. At least for me, I want to be like, I'm so sorry. I absolutely hear you. I'm the worst. I will not do that again. I'm making a note of it and it will be fixed in the future. Discomfort solved. We're good. But just because you've apologized and quote unquote made right doesn't mean the repair has happened. Doesn't mean that those feelings or the hurt is gone. And that person may actually need a little bit of time to sit with their feelings and what happened. And they may not want to go right back to the way things were before. It's going to take space and breath to be okay with it. And same thing when we're having conversations that are really difficult with people. And as someone who is not a mother, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I would have to imagine, yes, it's difficult to sit with our own pain and discomfort, but 10 times so to sit with the pain and discomfort of our children. And so, of course, we just want to solve it and say, okay, how can I get from discomfort to comfort as quickly as possible because this is so painful. But exactly what I'm hearing and what you're saying is what is being asked is to sit in the discomfort.
Boom. Right there. Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
We do not tolerate discomfort well. And that is the piece that we need to build upon. We need to work on being more tolerant of emotional discomfort.
Yeah. Well, and I think that goes back too to the people-pleasing perfectionistic Absolutely. Good girl who the rejection is discomfort. And it's this kind of proactively wanting to avoid discomfort by I'm going to be perfect in all of these ways, so I will never have the discomfort of someone not liking me, of someone not approving of me, of someone rejecting me, because who could reject this perfect image? And right. yet rejection still comes, abandonment still comes, because also who can actually accept you? Who can actually hold space for who you are if you're not showing that to people either? And that's something that I've experienced, this feeling of being like rejected by everyone. And it's like, but who could, have you ever really been rejected, or did you reject yourself mm-hmm. and then not give anyone the opportunity to accept you?
Right. And so what happens is we trade short-term comfort for long-term resentment, because giving up ourselves and abandoning ourselves at the cost of making everybody else help happy or comfortable, to regulate our own self, to make ourselves comfortable, we end up with resentment.
Yeah. Because yeah, that is exactly that.
I had to be who everyone else wanted me to be. And that is a barrier to connection and to healthy, meaningful relationships. We're the foundation of all of our relationships. So however the relationship you have with yourself, that is the foundation all of your other relationships are built from.
Yeah. So, so powerful. So to think about this in terms of truly what it then means to build these meaningful relationships, it is something that occurred to me as you were talking about being able to hold the discomfort with your children, was also that's kind of what you're called to do as a coach as well, in a lot of senses. Do you consider this work and this mode of holding discomfort with people to be part of your purpose, to be your purpose? And what does purpose mean to you along this new path? I certainly think that our purpose evolves with us. And to speak to your story about, I was really called to be a teacher in the school system, and then that shifted. So with the asterisk of my question that is, it's not concretized, but talk to me about purpose.
Yeah, I think purpose for me is, that inner drive and what it's pulling me towards. I don't think of it so much as what is my purpose? You know, that's a big question. And I think a lot of people are like, do I have a purpose? I don't know. Maybe it's more paying attention to those things that show up for you and are pulling you in a certain direction. So it's really paying attention. Being present to that.
Yeah. I love that. I really talk about purpose as like a true north on a compass as you're being pulled, right? So I absolutely resonate with what you're saying. And then in terms of meaning, because I think, like you said, a lot of us, I think, are struck with this idea of purpose anxiety and what am I doing here? And surely my purpose isn't just to people please and be a perfectionist. And is my purpose just to be a mother? Is my purpose what is all of this? How has your relationship with living a meaningful life shifted and changed as you've gone through this healing experience? Because I would imagine being a mother is an extremely, extremely meaningful part of your life. But of course, there's so many other facets of who you are and what you do. Yeah, so what does a meaningful life? Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know that that being a mother means it's meaningful. I think for me, what brings meaning to it is actually experiencing it instead of surviving. Mm. So for so long of my life, I was surviving. I was, you know, performing this, you know, bending myself. I was the chameleon. Who do I have to be in this situation, in that situation? That is survival. I was not experiencing my life. I was surviving it. And this journey is now allowing me to experience it. And that means the highs, the lows, the you know, all of the glimmery things and all of the mucky things too, and feeling it all, experience, being in the experience, that has brought meaning to my life.
That is truly the sentence. I wrote it down because I think we just need to sit with it for a second. What brings meaning is experiencing it, not just surviving it. Ooh, that gave me goosebumps again, rereading it. That is such a profound unlock, because I think with the hustle and bustle, the rush, even the anxiety that can come with what we've taught to think and feel about purpose and these bigger questions, we can still get so caught up in, but what does that mean? And how do I live fulfilling life? How do I live a fulfilling life? And how can I reach happiness and joy and make the world a better place? And even then, we're just constantly spinning our wheels towards it. And so often the moment of like profundity, of peace, of tapping back into that inner sense of oneness and wholeness is pausing and experiencing it. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Slowing down, this being busy, that survival.
Yeah.
Proving ourselves. So what I do now is, I mean, truth over approval. That's it for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes I don't know what the truth is for me. And so I pause, like you said, pause and check in. Is this, what is true for me in this situation? How do I want to respond? What do I think? What do I feel? What do I want to experience? And then, you know, respond with what is really true for me rather than what's going to be comfortable for others, what's going to be approved of. So yeah, that is my bottom line now. Truth over approval.
I love it. The sacred simplicity of that is so great. Well, as we reach the end of our time together, I do have two final questions that I always like to ask to lead us into our final moments. One, in light of our conversation, in everything that we talked about, is there anything that you want to return to, underline, highlight, clarify, anything that we didn't get to that you're like, we really need to touch on this real quick? Anything at all? This is space for you to speak to it.
Yeah. I think I'd like to say the thing that I help women with at finding their truth is boundary work. So I you know, boundaries is a whole another conversation. But that is something that is very, very misunderstood. And I like to call it boundary work instead of just boundaries, because there is work to it. There are foundational pieces that we need to work towards to have the ability to set and maintain boundaries that are true for you. It's not something we just set and maintain. And so that is how it's possible to find your truth and to finally speak your truth.
Wow. Absolutely. Thank you for adding that. And I completely agree that boundaries are very misunderstood as a concept and as a practice.
I think there can be a lot of people get triggered with it because I think there's shaming that goes on around it too. That, oh, you just need some boundaries, or you need to, you know, just have some boundaries. And it's not.
Right.
I got to a point one time where I kept hearing boundaries, boundaries. And then I'm like, I don't think I know what boundaries are exactly.
What does that even mean? Yeah. Yeah.
So then I went searching for that. So that's curiosity. Curiosity is a big, you know, that'll open a door for you. Then just keep following the curiosity.
Yeah.
And I think absolutely. It's very powerful when we know what we don't know.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and like you said, we can't do this work alone. It can't be done in a vacuum. And that is why knowing what you don't know and knowing that you can't always know what you don't know, too, is like, that's why keeping your eyes and ears and all of your perceptive agents open to let curiosity guide you is so, so important. Well, if anyone wants to learn more about you, your work, of course, your website, access to your coaching services, and to your podcast will be linked down below for everyone to go check out. Please, please go support Diane and her work. And if you are struggling with boundaries, the mother wound, or anything else that we have touched on, Diane is absolutely a wonderful resource to not be doing this work alone. Is there anything else that you would like to plug while we are here?
I think you did a great job right there. Yeah. I would love to have listeners come on over and check out the podcast, Chaos to Connection. Follow me on Instagram and send me a message. Send me a message. Let me know what you are taking away from this conversation. I love to have these conversations and I respond to all of my messages.
I love that. That's awesome. Well, my last question to hopefully put a little bit of a bow or a button, if possible, on this expansive time together. Diane, what is one word to describe how you are feeling right now?
Authentic.
Oh, I love that. And it speaks right to truth is better than approval. Thank you, Diane, so, so much for sharing your authenticity, your truth with me today, with the Cohere Collective, with the Making Meaning podcast. I have so enjoyed chatting and learning about you more and connecting, and I cannot thank you enough.
Thank you so much for having me, Reese. This has been a gift. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you all so very much for being here with me today. And of course, a huge thank you to Diane Sorensen for being here as well. It never ceases to absolutely floor me with the amount of authenticity and vulnerability that my guests show up with. Not only is having these conversations the highlight of like my life, these conversations are the ones that give my life purpose and meaning and help me make meaning, as I've discussed before, and all of the different feedback loops that go into the depth of thought behind making meaning. But truly, just the privilege of being able to bear witness and be the space that people share certain elements of their life is, I'm just so grateful. I'm just so thankful and appreciative of that. And of course, if you've made it all the way here, you can absolutely see that Diane has done just that in this episode. So, Diane, thank you so very much. And I know I learned a lot from this episode and from hearing this story. And I know that all of our listeners did too. And I really hope that you have and that you have enjoyed this episode. Again, if you're interested in checking out any of Diane's work, her podcast, From Chaos to Connection, and any of the other wonderful work that she has and does, please, please, please click on the links that are in the description down below, wherever you may be listening or watching. And you can learn more about the Cohere Collective at our website, thecoherecollective.com. Over there, you can learn more about my services, for purpose coaching to blogs and essays that are over there. And you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter called The Muse Letter that brings weekly insights for cultivating coherence to your inbox every single week, absolutely for free. And follow us on social media, wherever you may have social media. I post more than just what you're getting in the podcast over there. And there's more insights and glimpses into my personal life and what coherence means to me and how I implement these things into my daily life. And it's the best place to stay up to date on all things Cohere. You'll figure out if I'm at an event or offering tarot or if there's discounts on anything coming out. So definitely, definitely follow us, check all the things out. And as always, let me know what you thought about this episode. Again, has anyone in your life's personal relationship with their self-discovery, self-love, mental health, or other journey that they've been on sparked you going on this journey too? And why do you think that is? I think a lot of it is seeing the bravery in other people to confront certain things emboldens us, helps us feel more brave to do the thing that these people are doing. And that's why I think being vocal about this work and honest about the hard parts of it too is so important, because the more that we know we're not alone, the more people are going to feel inspired and supported in this community, in this collective, to live coherently, to do this work. Right now, I am feeling, you know what? I do like that word, emboldened, the one that I was just using to describe going on this journey. I think I've been going through a few different cycles of regeneration and changes recently, and this morning I woke up and it just was like, oh, I am now in this new cycle. I am now in this new phase, and I really feel emboldened through it to think bigger, act quicker and more loudly, and speak more boldly and with my truth and with my whole chest. There is something about this energy that I've felt today. I've really been through this cycle of like self-doubt recently, and this morning I woke up and was like, I think I finally integrated some of the last pieces that I needed to learn through that self-doubt. Not that it's gone, let's be clear. Not that I will never experience self-doubt or fear or anything like that ever again. They're still very much alive and well, and those are our friends that are along on the journey, but they're not allowed to sit at the wheel. But I really feel like I've entered into the next phase that is, self-doubt is here for a reason. It's here to communicate to us when things don't feel right, or when things do feel right, but there's some other blockage that we have there, right? If you're doubting something, go back to your intuition. You know, Carl Jung has the quote, where your fear is, there your task is. So sometimes when you're acting from a place of fear, it is a signal like, don't go there, don't touch that. But other times, it is a sign to lean in, to look at it, to face the things that we don't want to face. And for me, that's very much what self-doubt has become a messenger of the things that I didn't want to face. And I feel like I've been facing some of those things, as hard as it is, but I'm feeling emboldened to now take some of these learnings and keep going. 5:55 on the clock as I look over and I'm talking about this for all my fellow angel number lovers out there. Well, thank you all so very much for being here, for being my favorite part of Making Meaning.
And as always, I hope you feel like you are living more coherently. Until next time, love.